Well, it's a very gloomy morning indeed on Radio National Summer Breakfast. 20 minutes past eight now. Even our summer reading is a bit gloomy this morning. But now I'm sure that we can talk about something which will have no gloom associated with it whatsoever, because we're talking about ABBA, one of the few bands who won the Eurovision Song Contest without being a one-hit wonder. Love them or hate them, they've certainly got staying power. They've sold 375 million records in 35 years. Bjorn, Benny, Frida and Agnetha are obviously well into middle age now, but they still sell over 3 million records a year. And they've certainly got a thriving cover band scene dedicated to them as well. So no doubt some royalties flowing in there too. And let's face it, who hasn't belted out an ABBA tune at karaoke at some time of the late, late evening? Well, there's an exhibition called ABBA World, which is opening up at the Powerhouse Museum in Sydney this Friday. It features 20 original costumes, ABBA memorabilia, and a recreation of the ABBA dressing room. Not the ABC dressing rooms, they're far less glamorous than the ABBA dressing rooms. Ali Benton went along and checked out a sneak peek, a preview of ABBA World for Summer Breakfast.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Parsons, and the curator for Sydney's ABBA World exhibition at the Powerhouse Museum, and we're standing in the space where the exhibition is going to take place. We're the day before opening, and so we're putting the final touches of the exhibition, and that's what you can hear in the background. ABBA's about the only band that has won Eurovision that hasn't been a one-hit wonder, that has actually turned that into a career opportunity. But after their win with Waterloo, they released a number of singles into particularly the UK market that didn't go anywhere at all. And they then sent out these promotional clips, which included Mamma Mia on it, to Australia. They'd never been here. They'd never done any TV or anything. We'd just got colour television. It was 1975. And Molly Meldrum put Mamma Mia on to Countdown, and there was no plans to release that as a single. After the audience that had viewed it on television had seen Mamma Mia, there was such a demand for it that Countdown repeated it the following week. Mamma Mia, here I go again, my, how can I resist you? And then the record company, was the Australian one, RCA, was ringing up Polar Music in Sweden saying, you have to release this single because it's going off here in Australia. And so they did, and next thing that happened was it went rocketed to number one.
So ABBA have a lot to thank Molly Meldrum for.
Yeah, absolutely, that's right, and television. And then later, after ABBA parted ways, again, Australia played a really significant role in the whole revival with films like Muriel's Wedding and Priscilla in the early 90s. Again, Australia led the way with the whole revival that has now been going on. As Bjorn says again, he can't believe this music is still alive and around 30 years after they finished recording. Super trooper beams are gonna blind me,
but I won't feel. ABBA World is a mecca for the diehard fan. As you walk into the exhibition, you're treated to some of the original outfits worn by the band. Co-curator Ingmarie Haling was ABBA's makeup artist and stylist from 1977 to 1981. She's giving me a tour of the polyester magic that was the Swedish supergroup.
From the beginning, we have the Waterloo costumes that they wore in 74. We have the girl with the golden hair outfit, which is all made in different fabrics of gold, and with the golden wig that they wore together with that one. And that was only used on stage in the 77 tour of Europe and Australia.
Now we're in front of a replica dressing room.
Mostly we were in arenas, like ice hockey arenas, Edmonton or Toronto, wherever. But it was dressing rooms mostly used for athletes.
I can see in front of me the change room. There's a chessboard, there's an electric guitar. Whose electric guitar is this one?
This is a Washburn Eagle that belongs to Björn Ulvaeus. I believe that he got this from a company in Tokyo. And they spelled his name wrong. It's a little plate on the guitar it says his name, but spelled wrong. And then we have the original notes from I Have a Dream, written by Rutger Gunnarsson. He wrote the notations for that one.
ABBA performed their first Australian concert in 1977 at the Sydney Showground in Moore Park. Part of the exhibition is dedicated to that concert. Co-curator Jonathan Parsons.
We've got a couple of newspaper pieces. There's a fabulous one from one of the Sydney Daily Papers that with a headline just saying they're here. And everyone in Sydney knew who that meant without even having ABBA in the title. Some of the wonderful merchandising of that time. ABBA socks, everyone remembers ABBA socks, and we do have ABBA socks in the in one of the showcases.
Of course, over the last three decades, there's been reports and stories of the different controversies surrounding ABBA, different relationships within the band and outside of the band. Does the exhibition touch on that at all?
Not really, because I think a lot of people... what we've tried to do, I guess, is to have a mixture of very familiar material in the exhibition and also draw out some of the stories that are perhaps a little less familiar. And I think there's been a lot of stuff about their personal relationships in the press. What I think people are much less familiar with is particularly their early years before ABBA. Like, all of them had successful careers in Sweden before they formed. And we've got some wonderful photographs from that period, and so we talk a little bit about that. We also talk a bit about the Swedish cultural context at that time. There was actually a whole anti-ABBA movement in Sweden that I don't think anyone in Australia knows about because of the kind of politics at the time that was very left-wing. And there were a lot of people within cultural circles in Sweden that saw ABBA as representing everything that was evil because they were commercial and hugely successful. It, in a way, it's like the Swedish version of the tall poppy syndrome that was at its height during the 70s in Sweden. So that's a little known story that we pick up in the exhibition.
Will the exhibition meet the expectations of the diehard ABBA fan? The ABBA fan who thinks that they'll stroll into this exhibition and know everything?
Absolutely, because there is material in here that they will have never seen before. Of course, my biggest fear as a curator is the ABBA fans will know their stories backwards. They've been researching it for years and years and years, and I haven't had that length of time. So while I've had a number of ABBA fans that have been really helpful in the research process, I am very conscious that they're going to be my harshest critics.
That was the co-curator of ABBA World, Jonathan Parsons. And who knew that there was an anti-ABBA movement in Sweden? Obviously, Sweden's still in the news these days, but not to ABBA, thankfully. That was Ali Banton there with that report about the exhibition opening up in the Powerhouse Museum in Sydney.